Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Unfiltered Waters podcast. Today, I am personally so excited because we have fellow previous world record holder in the 200 backstroke. She also held it in the 100 backstroke, Regan Smith. Katie and I had so much fun with Regan today. She is a four-time world champion, a 2021 Olympian, and as I mentioned, previous world record holder in both the 100 and 200 meter backstroke. We have had a lot of brave and vulnerable conversations on this podcast so far, and I think it's safe to say that this one has been one of the most vulnerable that we have had. We were so honored by Regan's courage to speak so openly about her experience, her journey since breaking those world records back in 2019, the changes that she has had to make, what she has learned about herself along the way, and also some fun anecdotes and inside scoops of stories between her and her best friends and fellow teammates on Team USA. This is a truly special conversation. We are really excited for you all to hear this one. There are so many takeaways. Katie and I felt like we took so much away from it, and we know that you will too. So here is the lovely, the talented, and the unbelievably mature and wise Regan Smith.
This podcast is a Cannonball Media production.
You guys, this is one of our favorite endurance supplements for stamina, recovery, and soreness. Extreme Endurance by X Endurance is clinically proven to reduce lactic acid by 26%. This means less muscle soreness. It also reduces oxidative stress by 39%, which means it's fighting free radical damage. If you're looking to enhance your training by enhancing your recovery, Extreme Endurance is such an incredible place to start. I know for myself, I'm doing CrossFit for the first time in like 8 years. I am sore every single day, and this makes a huge difference in my recovery.
And X Endurance also has so many other amazing products. Some of our favorites are their protein, their collagen and greens, and their Fuel 5. I love their protein for a quick option if you're on the run but need to get something in. They are Informed Sports Certified and have so many different products that fit your specific needs. You can use code UNFILTERED to get 15% off your order, and we know that you'll see the benefits just as much as we do with these amazing products. Hey everyone, we just wanted to give a super special shout out to our amazing production staff over at Cannonball Media. We have an amazing team behind this podcast, and we couldn't do it without them. So thank you so much for all of your help.
If you're looking to start your own podcast, they take care of everything from A to Z. So reach out to cannonballmedia.co.
Regan, welcome to Unfiltered Waters. We are so excited that you're joining us straight from morning practice, which is no small feat. So thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this for a while, so I can't wait.
Well, likewise. We're so happy to have you here. We're coming off of Christmas training, the new year. How was practice this morning? How has training been going? Give us a little insight into what life in Arizona is like right now.
Yeah, so all cards on the table. I've had a rough December. I unfortunately got mono. Right when I got back from US Open. And so I spent all of December either out of the water or doing like barely anything. So my Christmas training was not a typical Christmas training, which is a blessing and a curse, right? Because everyone knows Christmas training is awful. So I missed it. But when you can't do it, then you really want to do it, you know? So I was having a hard time with that. But I did the entire practice this morning, and that's the first time I've done an entire practice since getting sick a month ago. So that was a huge win for me today. I'm on the come up. I don't feel sick anymore. I'm doing much better, and I'm excited to just like continue ramping things up and like preparing for this year. So yeah, it was a rough few weeks here in Tempe leading up to Christmas, but I'm over the bend and I'm doing a lot better.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, and if you. I remember correctly, is Friday normally, isn't it Friday Fly Day with Bob? Has he changed that?
He's changed it a little bit. So this morning, since the college team has a meet tomorrow, it was actually kind of like easier recovery fun stuff, which is like a little bit unlike him, you know? But yeah, no. So it wasn't a fly practice, luckily. But yeah, it was like fun. We did some relay exchanges and starts, and we did like some details and a little pull set because he loves his pull set. But yeah, it was good.
Good.
Isn't that so funny too? Like, I love what you said about, you know, kind of a blessing in disguise with Christmas training, how if you're actually in Christmas training, you're thinking of any way that you can get out of it. But then when you actually can't do it, you're like, oh man,
you're so
disappointed.
I would like pick out random people in the street, I had no idea their story, and be like, God, I wish I could switch bodies with me right now so I don't have to be in Christmas training. But then, yeah, like if you miss it, or even like I feel like a tough race, if like, you know, it got stormed out or, you know, something happened where you couldn't do it, you're like, oh, it's like that takeaway philosophy.
That perspective is so funny. Well, a whole first practice today back is a huge accomplishment. So I hope you're very proud of yourself for that, because that's a big deal after a month of feeling as horrible as I'm sure you felt.
I am. Yeah, thank you. It was a big step. And it's nice because I feel like I have a new perspective with swimming and training and competing. Like, I feel very grateful that I'm able to do it. And I think I have a newfound sense of motivation. Like, I don't feel burnout, you know, and I think that's really important going into this year. Like, I feel fresh and excited and like ready to go. So I'm trying to look at this whole thing as a big blessing in disguise.
Yeah. So, I mean, that leads us to what we really wanted to talk about first is, you obviously last year made this move, or I guess it's been a year and a half now, from Stanford to ASU. Yeah. I'm just really curious, like, what's different? What really helped you make that shift and that transition?
Yeah, it's different in a lot of ways. I mean, I left Stanford not because of like the academic stressor of things. Like, I've never loved school, but I've always been very good at it. I had great grades in high school, and I took my APs and my honors classes. And at Stanford, I had a 3.7 or something. That was my CUME GPA for the year. So I did well. And I was able to balance things well. But it wasn't a good fit for me. The atmosphere wasn't right for me. The training environment wasn't right for me. I just didn't enjoy where I was. And I didn't think it was worth it to stay at that prestigious university and get that degree if I was as unhappy as I was. Like, I put my happiness above everything, honestly. And then also, when I'm my happiest, that's when I'm swimming my best, which I know is true for most people. So I knew after my freshman year, I needed to make a change, just because I spent that entire year very unhappy and feeling like a lot of self-esteem issues and insecurity issues. So I knew I had to make a change, and I landed on ASU pretty quickly. Just because Bob and my club coach, Mike Parado, my age group coach, they have very similar training philosophies. And I just felt like Bob would be a much better fit for me. And I liked the idea of being in Arizona and kind of practicing being an adult, like being independent, having my own apartment, cooking for myself, cleaning for myself, living on my own. Because another thing about Stanford was that you had to live on campus all 4 years. You had to live in a dorm all 4 years. And so I feel like you never got to really practice being an adult, because you could never make your own meals. You always were living with someone else. You didn't really have a space to clean, like a kitchen or a bathroom. It was just like a dorm and in a bed. I was just excited about so many aspects of ASU, the training side and just the personal life side. And it exceeded my expectations in all of the ways I just listed and more. So it was just a great fit for me, and it's continued to be. And the training has been phenomenal, and the group that I train with is phenomenal, and it's perfect for me. Everything about it has just been wonderful. Like, it's kind of cool that I can look at it kind of in like a fairy tale way. Like, things just worked out really perfectly. And this is just like, it's like the glass slipper fitting perfectly, you know, like this is just the place that I needed to be all along. And I'm glad I figured that out.
Just took
me a little bit of time to get there.
Last slipper minute. I love that. Can you talk a little bit more about, I think a lot of times when people have to make these really large decisions that, you know, could change the trajectory of their life, they get paralyzed. And so I would love to hear how you went through that decision making to truly say, no, I'm not happy here and that's okay. And I need to make a move. Where did you start? Who did you turn to?
Yeah. And you have such a good point, because I did feel paralyzed. I felt like I had nowhere to go, because I feel like entering the transfer portal or transferring in general or giving up your eligibility especially only after 1 year, is a pretty rare thing to do. I know some people have done it, but I feel like people never leave from Stanford. And going pro after a year was like bizarre. And so I just felt like, yeah, I had to stick to the status quo and just do it. And I really just felt like there was no way out. And so I came home from Worlds after 2022. And I spent 3 months at home because I did not want to be on campus at all and train there over the summer. Like, I knew I couldn't be there. And I had a big heart-to-heart with my parents, like, over the course of multiple days. And they didn't push me, but they just helped me realize, like, Reagan, you're not stuck. Like, nothing's permanent that you don't want to be permanent. Like, I don't want you to feel like you've made your bed and now you have to lie in it. Like, you can get out of this if this isn't what's best for you. Like, ultimately, you gave it a try. You didn't walk away from it after 4 weeks. But ultimately, right away, when I got to campus in September of 21, I knew very quickly that, like, it wasn't the right place. And granted, I know that freshman year is very difficult for everyone. Like, it's a big change, and freshman year is hard for most everyone. But I just knew that it was different. But yeah, I felt like I was stuck. So I'm glad that my parents were able to look at me and say, like, you can take the path less traveled by. Like, this isn't forever. You're not stuck, and you can get out of it. So I think once they helped me realize that, then I was like, okay, yeah, I'm not paralyzed. I can make a change. But I just needed someone to tell me that. And it was my parents.
God bless good parents.
Yeah. What would we do without them?
It's so nice to have that reassurance too. I mean, I think like both of you said, that paralyzing feeling that you feel and having someone come in and tell you that's not the case. And I know it's how it feels, but you have options here. Without getting too into it, you know, similar with you, I knew I was only going to do 2 years in college before turning pro, but either way, having to make the decision to actually leave college and come back home and train was one of the hardest decisions I had to make in my swimming career. And again, without getting too into it, I was not very supported in making that decision, which made it so much harder. And I'm just so impressed by your ability and your maturity to understand that your happiness and making a decision that was going to put that first was not selfish. It was selfless, because if you are not at your best, if you are not happy, you are not bringing that to the pool deck every day. And not only are you not getting better, but you're also not encouraging the people around you to get better as well. And I know you love your training group at ASU. I know you train with a lot of the guys. So tell us a little bit about your training group and also just the work that you've been putting in, because a lot of what you've been talking about is there's nothing magic, there's nothing super special that you've been doing to absolutely crush the way that you have been. You've just been working really, really hard.
Yeah, exactly. And quickly before I get into that, I just want to address and agree with what you said about it being selfless and not selfish, because you're so right. Like, I wasn't proud of the person who I was at Stanford. It wasn't me. I was more irritable and I wasn't as excited to be at practice. And I didn't like the way that I would treat my teammates some ways, you know, like I wasn't a bad person and I wasn't mean to people, but I knew like I was better than that as a person. And I would always walk home from practice being like, could I have been more patient today? Or could I have been in a better mood today? Or could I have been a better teammate today? And the answer was typically yes. And I knew that, like, at my core, like, that's not who I am. And so now, being in this new environment that I know is much better for me, I feel like I'm much more myself and I'm able to be a really great and supportive and genuine teammate. And I like myself and I know that people enjoy being around me. And that's so important to me too. Because yeah, I didn't like how at Stanford. And it's not anything that anyone did to me. It was just a product of me being in my environment and it not working for me. But yeah, I wasn't proud of who I was some of the time when I was there. But now here in Tempe, I'm proud of myself all of the time because I've grown a lot and I've become a lot better as a person and as a swimmer. But yeah, this training group here at ASU, it is very special. And I do train with a lot of the guys. And I think that has been fantastic for my confidence, because I think the guys that I train with, they're just able to walk in fearless, and they can look at a practice. Bob writes out all his practices and photocopies them. So he'll hand us the practice on a sheet of paper, and it can be the worst thing any of us have ever seen in our whole life.
Which probably happens and, more often than not.
Yeah, I understand.
And in the past, I feel like I would look at a practice like that and want to cry and be like, I can't do this. I'm going to shut down. Like, I don't want to be here. This is terrible. But I've really learned a lot from my teammates because they're able to just look at the practice and kind of laugh and be like, well, this is going to be terrible for the next 2 hours, but then it's going to be over and I'm going to be able to move on with my day. So like, what can I do in these 2 hours to make this as good as possible and to get as much out of this practice as I possibly can? Realize that I'm not going to die. Like, I'm going to get through it and I'm going to be fine and I'm going to continue on with my day. And like, watching them and learning from them has helped me so much with, yeah, my anxiety surrounding practice and like my fear of certain practices and wondering if I'm like good enough to accomplish certain things in practice. I'm able to go in fearless and know that I can do it and it'll be fine. And I think that's translated a lot into my competitions as well, because I used to really, really struggle with pre-race anxieties. And I think it got a lot worse ever since I broke the world record, just because I immediately just felt all these pressures. And I'm sure you guys can relate to that, where you just kind of start to feel the weight of the world on your shoulders. And you're like, oh my gosh, like everyone's expecting X, Y, Z out of me. Can I meet their expectations? And now I'm able to go into meets being like, I don't care about meeting anyone's expectations but my own. And I know what I'm capable of. And I'm not afraid. I'm just excited because I've put in the work. And I just want to see where I'm at and what I can do right now. And it's as simple as that. And it doesn't need to be scary or daunting or anything. And so that's been the biggest change. But yes, also Bob is just great at giving us the work. Like, it's cut and dry. It's plain and simple. He gives us great practices. All we have to do is complete them and do them to the best of our ability, and we're going to see results. And that's exactly what I did all year and what I've continued to do this year as well. And I'm just seeing a lot of results. So it's just been a combination of all of those things that have just transformed me as a swimmer and a person.
I love that. I do have to ask before we move on. I heard Chase say this in one of the USA Swimming documentaries, that he felt like Bob had changed and Bob had gone, quote unquote, his words, not mine, softer. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, Chase did say that. And I didn't know Bob at all before the fall of 2022. But I had heard stories, of course. I knew that he had a reputation for being a certain type of individual. And so I was nervous because I'm a pretty sensitive person. And I know that I respond to like positive reinforcement, and I don't respond well to yelling because I'm sensitive and I'm pretty emotional, honestly. So I'll just cry because I'll feel like I've disappointed my coach. Yep, because I'm same. Always trying my best.
Exactly. So the same.
Yeah. Yep. When I get yelled at, I'm just like,
crumble.
Yeah, I do. I just crumble. Yeah. But it's who I am and I can accept that. But I've learned that Bob is incredibly good at reading people and knowing what each person needs. So he knows that, like, my friend, like Yeva, for example, she responds a lot better to tough love. And so he'll have no problem being like, you're going too slow, Yeva. You need to go faster. Like, you need to have a better pace on this. Like, don't get inside your head. Like, just keep going. And then she's able to respond to that. Whereas I think would be like, oh my gosh, like, no. But with me, he's much more like, if I'm not doing well, he just won't really say very much. And if I am doing well, then he'll be very encouraging to me. So it's cool that he really knows what each person needs. And he pays very close attention. And I really appreciate that about him. He knows that it's not one size fits all with the way that he treats people. So yeah, I don't know if it's fair to say that he's gone soft, because I mean, maybe for Chase it is, but yeah, since I haven't been there as long as Chase has been, I can't compare it. But I just think that Bob's wonderful at reading people and knowing what each person needs. And some people do need a little bit more of that tough love and old-fashioned style of coaching. And I'm not one of those people as much. and he knows that, and he handles me perfectly. So it's great.
That's such a good lesson for any coaches listening in too. I mean, that's such an incredible skill to have, is being so aware of each of your swimmers' individual needs. And that's a really hard thing to do as a coach.
Very hard.
And that's what makes Bob one of the best coaches the sport has and ever will see. And it's so wonderful to see you thriving so much underneath him as an athlete and in that group. I'd love to revisit what you were talking about with the world record. Definitely, obviously something that you and I share, and I so vividly remember watching you break my world record and going your 203 for the first time, and your just genuine reaction of pure and utter shock. Like, I could not believe what you were seeing. And it was just one of the most beautiful races. And in the time since then, you have been so brave and so open and vulnerable about kind of things that you've struggled with on the mental health perspective since breaking those world records. And one of the most profound things that you said, in my opinion, was you feeling like this 203 was your shadow, and you literally just felt like it was following you around. And I think that that was so strong and so important for people to hear and understand, that oftentimes we are working so hard day in and day out, and we still aren't going best times, sometimes for 4 years, 5 years, you know, on and on. And you went through a time period that, you know, you were struggling through that, and then you came out of it and you got to this place where you're like, listen, I just want a 205. That's like my third best time ever. And I'm thrilled with that. Like, that is so good. And that transition was so beautiful to watch. And that's what I'd love for you to talk about, if you would, kind of what you went through after breaking those world records and going into COVID, what your experiences was like, and ultimately how you got to where you are now.
Yes, for sure. And yeah, I love being able to talk about it with you guys, because you both really understand. And I know, Missy, you really specifically understand with me, because yeah, it was the same event, and I feel like we had a similar experience in the aftermath of it, maybe. But yeah, I remember, so I came out of nowhere, right? I broke it. I dropped 3 seconds overnight, like an age grouper, like a 10-year-old. Like, that, it was just so weird and so far out of left field. So yes, it was complete and utter disbelief and shock, just because I never thought I was capable of something like that. And so then I think after I did it, then I started to think like, okay, I never thought I was capable of that before. And as the months went on, I was like, am I ever capable of doing that again? And I remember at US Open in 2019 in December, I begged my coach to not put me in the 200 backstroke, because I was terrified of doing that event for the first time after doing it at Worlds. And I knew that was the first sign that like I was afraid of something, but I didn't want to accept that and acknowledge it yet. But yeah, that was the first time that I felt active fear about doing a race. Like, I always get nervous before races. I know everyone does. And I think we get nervous because we care, and ultimately our nerves turn into adrenaline, and that's what helps us. But it was not nerves. It was the beginning of like a paralyzing fear of it. And I'm not proud of that, but ultimately like it's a valid feeling that I had. And I don't want to feel weak because of it, because ultimately I've gotten through it and I don't feel that way anymore. But yeah, I felt so weak, but I was terrified to talk about it and tell anyone that I was really scared of it, especially my coaches and especially my parents. Like, I just couldn't tell anyone about it. I think the only person I could really talk about it with was my boyfriend at the time. But then, yeah, I think I was sort of able to get out of that rut. I competed the two back at two pro series before COVID hit, and then COVID hit and everything was put on hold. Right. And I know it affected everyone, but I think I really specifically struggled because everyone before COVID hit was talking about how I was the gold medal favorite in the 100 and the 200 backstroke at 17 years old. And it was just bluntly way too much for me. Like, after everything did get put on hold, I was like, oh my gosh, like a lot can change in another year. Like, who am I going to be a year from now? I can't compete. I can't really train. I don't like backstroke the same way that I used to because I just have this fear of it. But I'm still so worried that in a year from now, in 2021, people are still going to expect me to win gold in these events. And ultimately, I'm just not where I used to be. I'm not who I used to be. I don't feel the way I used to feel about these events. And so all of that was just piling on me. And I don't want to say that I was like too young to deal with it or too inexperienced to deal with it, but I had no freaking idea how to deal with it. And I didn't know how to talk to people about it because I don't like that I felt this way either, but I was under the impression that asking for help and talking to a sports psychologist or a therapist made me weak. And I don't feel like that anymore. And I so gladly welcome help, and I'm actively working with a sports psychologist now. But yeah, at the time I was just like, keep it inside. Don't be weak. Don't show any of your cards. Just be a machine and fake it till you make it. But I couldn't fake it till I made it. And I just completely crumbled. And that all came to a head at Olympic trials in 21. I walked into that final race. Oh my God, like the most scared I've ever been. I've never felt that way before a race before. All I wanted was for it to be over. Like I know that's a normal feeling at Olympic trials to just be like, oh my gosh, I just want this to be out of the way. But I just desperately was like, I can't do this. Like I cannot be here. I couldn't even like look at my competitors in the eyes because I was so terrified of them, which is just like terrible to think about. But that whole race was just awful. And the whole time that I was in it, there was no fight in me. There was just nothing. And I was just like, okay, like you're one cycle closer to being over. Okay, you're 150 closer to being done with this race. And then once I touched the wall and saw third, I was just like, you know what? It's over. I'm done with it. Like I don't have to do this in Tokyo. Like I'm extremely embarrassed, but I'm so glad it's over. And so that was so hard to deal with. But
Reagan, can I just stop you say these things like, oh, you know, like that's weak or that, like what you're saying right now is going to help millions of people. Like millions of people feel this in their job, their relationships, their next venture. Like it the way that you're, I just had to stop you because like the way that you're describing all of this like is so vulnerable, and like I have chills all over my body because like we've all felt those things, and like you are the most strongest bad ASS. I don't know if I can say it. Can we curse on the podcast? I don't know if we've established that yet.
Do we have a rating?
We have a clean rating on Spotify. So, but truly, like, I mean, it's just, I haven't heard someone describe it so raw as you just have. And it just hits. And like, you are so special for being able to articulate that in the way that you are.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. But yeah, I always want to feel like I can be really vulnerable and raw, like you said. Like, I'm not afraid of that anymore. And I know that ultimately talking about it helps me. And I know that talking about it helps other people too. And so I'm so willing to do it because, yeah, it's almost like therapy for me to just discuss it and like sit in those feelings, but also recognize that I can get through it. And also during that whole time, I told myself, like, no matter how hard it gets, like, do not quit. Do not walk away from this event. Like, get back to where you were. Like, it's going to be an extremely long road. But I knew, like, no matter how terrible of a relationship that I have with backstroke, I am never letting myself quit and walk away. And I really, really wanted to sometimes. But I was like, no. Like, I ultimately know that quitting and just like walking away and leaving backstroke and just moving into butterfly or IM or freestyle or whatever, or just like walking away from the sport at like 20 years old, like I wanted to do a lot of times, I was like, I can't. I know that I have a lot of potential and capabilities, and I'm lucky enough to not have chronic injuries holding me back or preventing me from staying in the water like for as long as I want to. And so I was like, the only thing that's holding me back is right up here. And so I just every day after the Olympics was like, continue to find ways to push. And then at Stanford, that got extremely difficult because, as I said, like, it just wasn't the right environment. And all I wanted during that entire year was to graduate as fast as I could and retire and start my life. And now that I'm here at ASU, I feel completely different and I want to swim for as long as my body allows me to and as long as I'm competing at a high level and enjoying it. And that has just allowed me to like accept backstroke and learn to love backstroke again and be with a group of people and a coaching staff who sees my potential and wholeheartedly believes in me and has the tools to help me succeed in a way that I know that I can. And so I felt like I was just getting everything that I needed to get last year. And I was just beginning to love competing backstroke again. I did not feel that crippling fear. I was still very nervous because I think I'll always feel the most nervous before backstroke races. But I didn't have that crippling fear. I wanted to see what I was capable of. I wanted to see how my times in practice could translate to my times in a meet. And so, yeah, it all came to a head in a more positive way at 2023 trials when I got back to 203 for the first time since Worlds. And that was such a gratifying moment. Like, I'm far more proud of that swim than I am of my world record swim. Like, I think that's like the best swim of my life. And I think that's a swim that I'll always feel extremely, extremely proud of. Just because to go through what I did, to break the world record at that age, just like you did, and then to just have everything pile on and not feel like I was capable of, you know, withstanding that pressure, but then ultimately forcing myself to work through it and being patient with myself and understanding that it would take years, but never giving up, and then getting back to that point just made everything worth it. It made everything worth it. It made all of the pain and all of the tears, all of the sleepless nights. I had so many of those surrounding my backstroke, but it literally just made everything worth it. It was just very full circle and it was wonderful. So I know that was a very long-winded answer, but I know you appreciate my thoroughness and I think listeners will too. And I really enjoy talking about it. I do. I didn't used to. I didn't want to talk about it, but now I love talking about it and I'm really proud of it. So.
You should be, right? I mean, it's incredible to hear you go so in depth, and it's not what people assume. When they see you behind the blocks at an Olympic Games, their first thought is not, she is terrified right now. And for you to normalize that and for you to speak to that and to this fear is just so, so important. And I related to so much that you just said. And I know that this is something that does work for people, but I was so similar to you in the fake it till you make it did not work for me. And that was my entirety of lead up into 2016, of just being absolutely terrified, but telling myself every day that I wasn't. And ultimately that catches up to you, and it did not work for me. And for you to be standing there now and to have that pride in yourself for having gotten to that point of you realize that that was something that you couldn't just pretend wasn't there, but you're facing it. And now to have this love and this passion and this motivation come back truly just makes you one of the best role models, not just in this sport, but as an athlete in general, to anyone who is watching and understanding your story of truly what it is that you have overcome. And they can look at you now, regardless of what the number says on the wall, and just see someone who has already come so far along her journey and is proud of who she is and what she's accomplished, which is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll always persevere. That's a lesson that I've learned. And if people can take away anything, it's just, it's so cliche, right? But it's never give up. So cliche, but it's so true.
Sleep is the foundation to performance and longevity. It is either enhancing your performance or holding you back from your highest potential. Dream Recovery is committed to just that, helping people sleep as well as possible so they can conquer the day. Dream Recovery believes in the power of evidence-based solutions to optimize sleep and recovery.
Yes, and everyone deserves to feel their best, and that starts with a great night's sleep. So many of our own Unfiltered Waters guests use Dream Recovery's sleep mask and mouth tape, including Carson Foster and Michael Andrew, and they swear by how much it has helped their sleep and performance in the pool. Visit dreamrecovery.io to have your best sleep ever. Use code UNFILTERED for 30% off your entire order and 50% off your first month of Dream Tape. Sweet dreams.
We are so excited and honored to be sponsored by Little Words Project, a company whose founder and purpose means so much to us and to others. Little Words Project is a company with handcrafted bracelets with custom words or sayings that serve as wearable affirmations of our worth and everything we are capable of achieving.
Each of their products have different inspirational words on them, and the idea is to wear your word for as long as you need it and then pass it on to someone who needs it more one day. The best part is they each have a unique code on their gold tag that can be used to connect your bracelet to their website, where you can track where it goes as it travels from wrist to wrist. I have a day-by-day bracelet that I gave to Missy, and it's a huge mantra for us as we started this podcast to take it day by day as we keep rolling forward.
I have never taken it off. It serves as such an incredible reminder to truly take it day by day and yes. to be proud of everything we've achieved up to this point and hope to continue to do so moving forward. So what are you waiting for? These make the best gift for yourself or for others. They're available online at littlewordsproject.com or in one of their 12 brick and mortar stores across the nation and in over 900 Target locations as well. Happy shopping. Hey, there's reason it's cliche.
There's a reason for that. Yeah. I mean, I just from as an observer and a fan, I related so much to watching you pre, you know, when you were terrified and now post and being at World Trials and seeing your reaction. It's interesting because for a while it looked like the relief was overpowering the happiness, and based on everything you just said, right? And I felt that too. Like, I was never the one to smile behind the blocks. If I did, it was forcing it. I was about to throw up. I was never the one where, like, my face, like, I had a lot of those like jaw dropping reactions because it was just like, oh my God, thank God that's over. Mm-hmm. Not, oh my God, I just won. This is amazing. And so I would be curious to hear, you know, and someone asked me this last week, and I was like, this is such a hard question. Do you feel like before you went through kind of this evolution of yourself, do you love to win and hate to lose then? And then now, same question, do you love to win or hate to lose?
Yeah, it is a hard question. I think I'm thinking about Olympic trials specifically when I made the team in the first event, the 100 back. So then I was officially an Olympian after that race. And yeah, I looked at the board and it was not excitement and happiness. It was literally, thank God. Like, thank God. If I didn't make it, how embarrassing would that have been for me? When in reality, it should have just been like, I'm going to the Olympics. Like, oh my gosh. But in reality, it was just like, thank God I didn't blow it. And it should have just been so much happiness. So I think 2 years ago, I was terrified of losing. It's not that I hated losing, but I was like terrified of it just because I felt like people expected something of me. Whereas now, after everything I've gone through, I don't give a crap what people expect from me. I just want to care about what I expect from myself and what Bob knows that I can do. And I think it's a mixture of both. I think I hate losing because I have pride and I have an ego, and I think every great athlete does. But I also love to win, and I love to see the fruits of my labor like come about. You know, I just love to see the hard work pay off. So I hate losing because I feel extremely competitive now, whereas before it was like I didn't feel as competitive because there was more fear. And so I was just like, oh, like they can have it because like I'm scared and I can't do it. But now it's like, okay, like bring your A game and I'm going to bring mine too. And let's see who's better on this day. And I feel like that specifically, like with Kaylee, for example, like she brings her A game every single freaking time she races. And I used to be afraid of that and just want to back down from that. And now I feel like I'm in a place where I'm like, all right, like yes, she's going to bring her best every single time. And you know what? I am too. And it's going to be entertaining to watch. And it's going to be really exciting to be in the race with you. And at the end of the day, like, whoever wins, like, I tried my very best. I went out there and I wasn't scared. And I stuck to my race plan and I fought like heck. And I'm going to shake your hand and be genuinely happy for you and walk away and know that I'm better for it. So yeah, I do. I think it's a mixture of both. I hate losing, and I love winning and seeing it pay off. So yeah, I hate to say that it's both, but yeah, it used to just be that I was terrified of losing and I liked to win because it was a relief, but now it's a lot better.
Yeah, you can see that all over your face, which like melted my heart when I saw that. I was like, I see that because I've been there.
I see the change. And that's perfect talking about Kaylee too, because we know you get asked all the time about how stacked it is swimming backstroke right now as a female. I mean, both nationally and internationally, the talent is just truly unbelievable. The races are so fun to watch because, as you said, it's literally on a given day, like who is best. And so we know that. What I would kind of like to focus on more is the amazing respect that you have for your competitors and even the relationships that you have with them. I think that that is something that is so special. And you did an interview that I loved where it's almost exactly what you just said, where you were just saying, I can't wait for, it was talking about Kaylee specifically, both of us being at our best and getting to race. Like, I'm excited for that. I'm so excited for that push and that motivation. So tell us a little bit about the competition that you feel, I mean, on a daily basis, but how that is now uplifting you and encouraging you as opposed to adding maybe to the fear in the way that it was before.
Yeah, you're so right about everything you just said. And on my worst days, because everyone has those, right? On my worst days where I'm feeling insecure and unconfident or upset, I'm bitter and resentful that backstroke is as talented as it is right now. I'm like, geez, like, why couldn't I have picked another event that's more open, you know, or that isn't as stacked as it is? Because at a US trials, it's almost just as easy to get first place as it is to get seventh, you know? And it's crazy. So yeah, on my worst days, I'm like bitter about it. But yeah, most of my days, and I'm thankful that it is most of my days, I'm just like, yeah, I don't think I'd be as good as I was if the field wasn't as good as it was, because we all are pushing each other to such an extremely high level. Like, it's like, we're always wanting more. We're never settling. Like, we're never feeling comfortable because we know our spot can be snatched up like that, you know? And so, yeah, I do. I just have so much respect for everyone in this field, nationally and internationally, just because we all get it. And I know that we're all working so incredibly hard every day because we know how difficult it is to make teams in this event. And we know how difficult it is to get on the medal stand in these events. And yeah, I am very happy that I'm in a place now where I think about my competitors in practice some days and I'm like, they're working really hard right now. And what can I do to go above and beyond and do something better? Instead of 2 years ago, I'd think about them and be like, oh my gosh, they're probably doing better than me in practice right now. Like, they're probably ahead of where I'm at and I'm not going to be good enough. So why am I even bothering to try? So now I'm just like, okay, like, how can I do absolutely everything in my power to be the absolute best I can be come race day? Because I know that's what my competitors are doing. And then, yeah, come race day, it's like, I know that I'm at my absolute best and they're at their absolute best. And that's what sport is all about. You know, it's people competing, doing their best, giving an honest, wholehearted effort, enjoying the spirit of competition, and not letting it get any deeper than that. And I know for some people, like, rivalries work and they want to feel angry at their competitors. But that's just never worked for me. I don't like having hate in my heart or anger when I step up behind the blocks. I've always loved having a healthy relationship with, like, the spirit of competition and the spirit of sport. and letting it uplift me instead of like fueling it to anger me and then channeling my anger into fast swimming somehow. Like that's just never worked for me. But again, I know it does for some people. So that's not judgment in any way on my side, but I just know it's not what works. And it's not because I'm weak. Like it's not because I don't want it bad enough, but it's just not what works. Like I just need to have a different perspective and outlook on it. And yeah.
I mean, the reason Missy and I love you so much is I think we all three of us are very sensitive souls. Like yelling does not work. Like we can't have hate in our heart. Like that's just not like if someone says something like you were talking about even like today, was I kind? What did when I, you know, I would have these long sessions with myself after like, did I say that to that person? Are they upset about
it?
Right?
It's how did just, they take it?
How was did it? They take it? Like I'd be like,
did it come out wrong? Did I say that?
Like over a time, Nathan Adrian was like, why don't you just like go home and like watch TV and enjoy your life. I was like, but like, I can't, but I think like, that's why we are who we are. And like that, you just know that about yourself, right? Like, you know, that yeah. being friends with your competitors, it doesn't take away your edge, like you said, or doesn't make you any less when you dive in the water, like you're going to be a savage. I can relate to that because Stephanie Rice was also an Australian, and she and I traded world records in the 400 IM a couple times, and we actually have matching tattoos that I don't know if a lot of people know. Like we got them back in 2010, like it was like a friendship tattoo.
Wow.
So are you and Kaylee getting a tattoo is really what I'm getting. And what will it be?
That's amazing that you and Stephanie did that. Wow. Wow. Yeah, I respect Kaylee so much, and I know she respects me too. And I ultimately know that, yeah, like when we're in the ready room, it's like we're not playing games with each other. We just want each other to be at our best, because like that's what makes the races the most exciting. And when she's at her best, that encourages me to be at my best. And the tattoo thing, that's so cool. Like that's really so cool.
I just learned about this today. I was like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, you know what's funny too is, and Caroline Burkle also has this, but we were at PAMPAX and Steph was injured and Caroline wasn't on the team. And like, I remember them texting me about it. I'm in like a team meeting. They're like, we're heading there. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, can we just like, it basically means faith, hope, and love. And Michael will say that it looked like I was attacked by a pen. Actually, Bob said that too. But it's faith, hope, and love. And yeah, all three of us still have it. So maybe one day we'll turn it into a heart so it doesn't look like we've been attacked by a pen. But you guys should come up with a way better than dots.
That's so special. I love that.
It's really cool to have these relationships with international competitors as well, because I think the closeness of the USA team is so evident to people watching, right? I got asked that all the time, was, you know, is the team really as close as it looks? And every time you're like, absolutely, which is wild when you think about we're competing against each other. I mean, 4 weeks prior at trials to make these teams.
Yeah.
And then we are able to come together and get so close. But I love hearing both of these stories. And I love other people hearing them of also, you do become really good friends with the people that you're able to compete against.
Like,
and it's so special. And Regan, I know that you have so many close friendships on Team USA now. And I loved how you've also talked about your transition with that is, you know, when you were really young, it was fun, but it was almost like instead of friends, you had mentors. And now you truly do have best friends. So what is it like getting to share these experiences, travel the world, have training trips with some of your best friends?
I look forward to it so much. Making my first few teams, like in 2017, 2018, and 2019, yeah, you're right. I was the youngest by far every time. And I enjoyed the trips, but I would never really look forward to going in the sense that like I was excited to spend 3 weeks with my friend. I would view it more as like, okay, I'm going to go on a business trip now for 3 weeks. I'm like, I'm going to have some good times, but like, it's not going to be like a super, super fun time, you know, just because of the age group that I was swimming with. And now it's so fun. It is so fun. Like 2021 was the first time that like I was not the youngest one on the team anymore. There were so many teenagers, and my suite in Tokyo was myself, Erica Sullivan, Alex Walsh, Emma Wyant, Phoebe Bacon, and Kate Douglas. So all of us are like the exact same age. And that was one of the best, funnest times of my life. It was like absolutely incredible. And they're all like some of my very best friends still and will forever be. Like Kate is one of my best friends, one of the best friends I've ever had. I talk to her almost every single day and I love her so much. And we got close at the Olympics and our relationship is just built from there. But yeah, what I just love about swimming is just the way that we're able to so deeply understand each other and we get what each other's going through. And the way we're just able to bond on those trips is so special. It's so special. And I know you guys get it too. But yeah, that's like one of my biggest motivators for making trips every year. Like, yeah.
Going on trips with your best friends.
You don't want the FOMO. Wait, I have to ask though, before this cannot go unasked. The capybara thing, I need to understand because I watch these and I don't ever ask anyone because that's just creepy. So can you please explain the capybara phenomenon? And am I saying it correctly? Because I looked it up before.
I think you are. So 2022 Worlds, I was rooming with Kate and we were sitting in our hotel room and I was just scrolling through my Instagram For You page. And I came up upon this Instagram account called Capybara Affirmations. And it was basically just a meme account. And it was like these pictures of capybaras. And the captions were just like ridiculous. Like it would say like, I will not cry before my finals, or like, I will not sob to Taylor Swift on my shower floor or something like that. So they would just say like these ridiculous, like silly, funny, like lighthearted, like affirmations, like sarcastic affirmations. And I was dying laughing because I was like, what do capybaras have to do with like, it was just right up my alley of my sense of humor. Like I was just dying laughing at it for hours. And I kept showing Kate and she was like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen, but I love it and I'm here for it. And so then I just started sending my favorite memes into the girls group chat and people were responding to it really well. They were kind of, they had the same reaction as me. They were like, what the heck is this? This is so weird, but this is so funny. And I remember Leah Smith was one of the captains that year. And then she had the great idea of us having like a team bonding exercise where we all got like little sheets of paper and we did arts and crafts and we got to write our own like affirmations. And it just kind of has gone on from there. And I still think it's so funny. I still follow that account. And like back in October, Olivia Smoliga, she got me like a framed photo of one of the affirmations. And it says like, I'm able to thrive under any circumstance. And I have it on my bedside table. So I have it on my nightstand and I look at it every morning when I wake up, every night when I go to bed. And it's just funny. Like I love it. And when I am having a bad day, I'm able to look at it and be like, I am able to thrive under any circumstance. Like not every circumstance is ideal, but yeah, like I will get through it. So yeah, it's basically just a silly, stupid thing, but it brought me a lot of happiness and it brought a lot of my teammates a lot of happiness last year. So it was just so funny.
Then it's not stupid at all.
I love that. I mean, and then you've obviously seen the music video and the song and all that, right?
Yeah.
Because I went down a rabbit hole.
This is what we did prior to this episode. As we watch the capybara rap song. I love hearing stories like that too. It's so fun to hear some of the behind the scenes and what little things like that, how they turn into special memories and moments that now you'll never be able to look or think of a capybara again without thinking of me.
How many people are going to Google capybara because they don't know
so many,
what it is?
So many. Well, we are nearing the end of our time, Reagan, but before we go, something that I would love to talk to you about is your involvement with FOSS Swim School, because I think it is so amazing. Katie and I are both super passionate about this. I do a ton of work with the USA Swimming Foundation with awareness of drowning prevention. And you have been doing so much work with FOSS. I know you're in the process of putting together a scholarship to provide lessons for families that wouldn't be able to afford swim lessons otherwise, which is so incredible. The impact you are making is going so far beyond the pool. But talk to us a little bit about that and your passion for it.
Yeah, thank you so much for giving me the space and time to talk about it. I've had a hard time figuring out what my passions are outside of sport. Like, I've always had a hard time finding hobbies and things that I enjoy, just because swimming has always been my whole life. And working with FOSS has been one of the first things that, like, I'm truly so excited about and feel so passionate about and have so much energy to give. And I think it's because in working with them, I just started to realize how lucky I am that I've never feared the water, that I've always felt comfortable in the water, and I've always taken that for granted. And I know that so many millions of people don't know how to swim, never had access to learn to swim programs, don't feel comfortable being around the water, and the water actively scares them. And I could not imagine ever living like that. And thinking about people feeling that way just makes me feel so terrible, because I know, like, swimming in the water and being around it brings me so much happiness. And I know everyone's different, but I just hate to think that there's people out there who just feel the complete opposite way that I do. And so I feel like I've tried to start making it my mission in a way to get rid of that as much as I can. And I know ultimately, like, swimming lessons cost money and they're expensive and a lot of people can't afford them. And I completely understand that. And so I just wanted to think of a way, like, even if I could help one family with this scholarship or two or 10, that's so much better than zero. And I just wanted to give back in a way that was more than just with my words. Like, I felt so good to put money and time and effort into something that truly makes me so happy. And I know makes a difference for other people and could save people's lives. And I'm just so excited talking about it. And what I love in return is that FOSS is so excited and working with me about it. Like, they're not just paying lip service to it and be like, yeah, we'll do that. They're so actively excited about it and see its potential and are working towards it actively. Like, we're constantly in touch about it in the works. And I'm really thankful. My dad has been really helpful with me a lot too, and working with FOSS and figuring out the logistics of how this would work. So I have my dad to thank too. But I'm so excited, and it is in the very beginning stages still. But yes, I want to put my money aside and work with FOSS and give out scholarships to families, yeah, who can't have it, just because I know it was never something. It was always such a privilege for me, but I never saw it as that. I just saw it as, like, a God-given right. Like, yep, like, I know how to swim, I'm not afraid of it, but I know it isn't like that for so many people. And when I realized that, I felt kind of spoiled in a way, and I was just like, this isn't right. Like, how can I give back? So that's what I wanted to do, and I'm really, really excited about it.
That's amazing, Regan. Thank you so much. And it's so powerful. The work you are doing will literally save lives. So there's no greater work than that. So thank you so much for being so passionate, for sharing that with us, and for the work that you are going to continue to do for, I'm sure, a very long time. We will finish off now with the same three questions that we ask all of our guests at the end of every episode, and I'll have Katie kick off with our first question.
Yes. So question number one is, what is a moment or memory inside the sport of swimming that brings you the most joy?
Off the top of my head, I think it's spending time with my sweet mates in Tokyo. That was the best time. And I think we got really close because of COVID and because we had to be in our rooms. If we weren't competing, we had to be in that suite. And we literally just spent 2.5 weeks together in that suite, spending so much time together, learning so much about each other, being so, like, open and honest and vulnerable with each other. And I know that wasn't actively, like, while we were competing, but I met all of those people through swimming, and I've formed friendships with them that I would not have formed, I think, in the same way if COVID hadn't happened, because we would not have been able to spend that same time together. So that is something that I always look back on and, like, wish I could relive. That was such a fun time.
I mean, this is a lesson for every, like, not one person, I think, has said a race when we've asked
you
them.
Know,
like, not one person. It's always, like, training camps or teammates or just being together with people that are awesome human beings. Yeah. So,
and also with that suite, how could you not?
I know.
Exactly. I mean, talk of
exactly.
I have FOMO of not being there and rooming with you guys on that.
I know. It's so fun.
All right. Our second question is exactly the same. So what is a moment, experience, or memory, but this time outside of the sport of swimming? So just life in general that brings you joy and happiness.
That one is harder because so many of my things in life have revolved around swimming. But what came to my mind first was, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because I understand that we're running out of time, but I met my first boyfriend in the sport of swimming, and we spent 6.5 years together, and we parted ways a few months back, but it was on exceptionally good terms. And I know that I met him inside of swimming, but all the experiences that we shared outside of the pool and what we learned from each other and how we grew with each other, like, honestly, I think it's my whole experience with him. And I think ultimately, like, things ran its course and I don't regret anything, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And I know that he doesn't either. And we still have so much love and care so much about each other. And I really do. I just look back on everything that we went through outside of the sport, because we were training partners every day too, but just the memories that we had, like, as people and not just as swimmers, that I just look back on that all the time. Like, I still do, but like in more of a friendship way now, and as just of a, like, we're always going to be there for each other type way. So that was another pretty vulnerable answer, but it's true. Like, that's just, and that's not a specific moment, but it was just a long time of sharing every part of your life with someone. But it's so special to me.
That's such a beautiful perspective, right? And thank you. Yeah. I mean, we know that's a very personal thing to share. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. And you're setting, both of you, an unbelievable example of carrying on that love and gratitude with one another, even as your relationship changes and shifts. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Of course.
Are you 35? Right?
And next up, Regan Smith, the love expert. Episode 2.
I've got some questions. All right, well, final question. What is a word or mantra that has, I guess, brought you a ton of value and growth in your life as you look towards this next year and beyond?
Yes. So my few words, it was when I was developing my custom goggles with Speedo, and it was very significant to me at that point in time. And it was bet on you, bet on yourself. Because when I was designing my goggles with Speedo, that was while I was making my change from Stanford to ASU. And it was a big, scary time. And I knew that I just needed to take the leap and bet on myself and go all in on myself, put myself first, do what I need to do, not worry about, you know, what anyone else wants me to do or thinks I'm capable of doing or not capable of doing, but just going all in wholeheartedly on me and just believing in myself 100%, betting on me. And I've continued to remember that ever since. I put that in my goggles a year and a half ago. And I think it was something that my stepmom told me, actually. Like, she was like, that'd be a cool thing to put in there. And yeah, the more I thought about it, like, the more significant it became to me. And yeah, I just love the idea of being 100% in on you all of the time. Because it's easy to be your own worst critic, you know, and be the hardest on yourself. But like, just never forget, like, yeah, you have to be with yourself every day of your life until you die. And so why not be anything less than 100% in on you every day, all the time?
I love that so much.
And that concludes Regan's TED Talk. Thank you so much.
Well, I will tell you one thing, my dear, and you have got the two of us betting on you 100% all the way through. We are so thankful for your time, your vulnerability, you sharing so much of your story and journey with us. And we just can't wait to continue watching and cheering you on. But thank you so much for being such an incredible guest to us today. And hopefully it won't be long before we see you again.
I hope so. This has been amazing. And I just want to tell you how much it means to me to do this. I've looked up to both of you for a very long time, and so this is really special to me, and it means a lot. So thank you so much. I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
Oh, thanks, Reagan.
Thanks, hon. So mutual.
Thank you so much for listening and watching Unfiltered Waters. We are so grateful for your support. If you could please hit that subscribe button on any of the channels that you're watching and maybe even give us a rating or review, we would appreciate it so much. Thank you again, and we'll talk to you soon.